Hello and welcome to episode 52 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And this week we're speaking to Elsa De Silva, the founder and CEO of Red Dot Foundation. Through her app called Safe City, Elsa and her team document sexual harassment and abuse in public spaces. And in the past 4 years, Safe City has become the largest crowd map on the issue of sexual abuse in India, Kenya, Cameroon, Nigeria, and Nepal. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show.
Welcome to the show, Elsa. It's always so great to have pioneers and visionaries like you on our podcast, and we're very grateful to you for taking the time to speak to us today.
Thank you, Ankita and Meenal, and I'm really glad to be on Desi Outsiders.
So, Elsa, we want to start at the very beginning, you know. So let's start off by, it's going to be a slightly touchy topic for you to talk about, but we want to go to the very beginning. So let's talk about that train incident when you were just a 13-year-old girl and you experienced sexual violence for the very first time in your life. You know, do you want to tell our listeners what happened there?
So I was on a train in Mumbai, and in those days, some of the ladies' compartments would turn into general compartments after a period of time. And it was at one of those moments when, before we could reach our destination, the ladies' compartment suddenly turned into a general compartment. And it was, as you can imagine, filled with people. And as we were trying to get off, positioning ourselves near the door to the compartment, my mom and my siblings and I could feel someone lift my skirt and grope me in a way that was really terrible, touching my private parts, etc. And I wanted to scream out, but, you know, the noise levels in the compartment were really high. I don't think anyone would have heard me. My arms were pinned to my side because of the number of people in the compartment. And all I could do and think was, I just need to get out of here. And thankfully, I did. But, it was an incident that left a deep mark on my mind. Of course, I tried to forget it as quickly as possible, which we always tend to do. But I didn't realize it that, it impacted me in a way where I hated traveling by train. And if you know Bombay, it's the best way to travel across the city. It's the fastest and the cheapest way. Whereas later on in life, I was, willing to drive and get stuck in traffic for hours, but I would hesitate to take the train.
And so we all have our ways of associating past trauma with triggers in daily life, and trains seem to be a trigger for you. And similarly, you know, a 17-year-old girl that you once spoke to who had been molested by a religious leader said that she got triggered every time she was in the presence of another male, even if that was a member of her own family. So your data shows, Elsa, that 1 in 3 women has faced sexual violence in some form or the other. So would I be exaggerating if I said that most of the women out there are struggling to go about their day-to-day lives because of similar triggers around them?
So I have to correct you there. My data doesn't show that statistic. It's UN Women's data that says 1 in 3 women on an average experience some form of sexual assault at least once in their lifetime. In my experience, we have done workshops for over 8,000 women and girls, and I always ask them to put up their hands to, identify if they have experienced some form of it, and pretty much 90% or more have. So yes,
wow.
It's absolutely right. We experience it. We experience different forms of sexual violence in the daily course of our life. Many of it is normalized, and therefore we tend to accept it. We file it in our subconscious, try to forget it as quickly as possible. But it does impact us in many ways. It limits our movements, restricts our choices, and affects our mental health. And we don't realize it's happening till we speak up or make that association. So to give you an example, recently I was in Argentina and I was doing an interview. And then at the end of the interview, the journalist told me her story that when she was 13 years old, and she didn't come from a rich family, she came from a poor family and she loved reading. So she had to go to the public library to access information. And on one of those trips, she was groped and she was followed. And that left such a lasting impression that for many years she stopped going to the library. And she only made that connection when I was doing the interview, you know.
Oh.
But imagine, you know, she did make it as a journalist, but she had stopped going to the library. But imagine if she had not stopped going to the library. She could have accelerated her career much faster. She would have felt more confident. And she would have never, you know, wondered why she hated going to a library. You know, I mean, some associations you never understand why till you start digging deep. But these are things that we tend to forget or try to forget or bury in our subconscious mind.
And actually, if the UN's data, which shows that 1 in 3 women has faced sexual violence in some form or the other, I would presume that it's probably more than that, because a lot of it goes unheard and unnoticed, and maybe people are even too afraid to mention that. So I think 1 in 3 is probably an underestimation of the real, of like the real deal of what's really happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's underreported and undercommunicated. Yeah. All this data is underreported. And that's the reason why I believe that Safe City is important, because we help bring these stories to light and give the option for someone to report anonymously. And it's very important to document these incidents, because if we don't, it never happened. In a way, it never ever happened.
And years later, Elsa, you found yourself in the position of the vice president of network planning for Kingfisher Airlines. Now, I mean, we all know what happened to the airline, but was it specifically the decline of the company that forced you to quit your job?
No. You know, so I had a long career in aviation. I started off as a flight attendant and then I rose up the career ladder. I mean, I was on a fast track. So I was with Jet Airways earlier. I spent 11 years there. And, you know, I used to, after being a flight attendant, I was identified to be a flight safety instructor, where I taught pilots and cabin crew safety and emergency procedures. And then I went through their one and only fast track for, you know, stars within the system. And I was assigned to a strategic department called revenue management. And then later I joined Kingfisher when it was a startup airline, and I took on a lot of responsibilities. That's how I ended up as vice president network planning, which is a highly strategic department. Much before that, you know, much before the decline of Kingfisher, I was already, you know, I'd already felt like I'd reached my glass ceiling. I felt that I had ticked all the boxes for myself in aviation. And I was, you know, looking to take a sabbatical and explore, you know, how could I give back? And in particular, I wanted to work on women's rights, except I didn't know how or what I was going to do. But in the year 2012, many things happened. One was I got through the Swedish Institute Management Program, which was focused on CSR, that's corporate social responsibility and sustainability in business, where, you know, I had the opportunity to hear about exciting social innovations, including HarassMap Egypt. But I didn't think it was urgent for us to implement it in India. Mm-hmm. However, on returning from the program, the gang rape of Jyoti Singh took place in Delhi, where she lost her life. And that's when it suddenly hit me, this is what I need to do. Since Kingfisher had shut down operations, they were still trying to revive the airline, which I was part of that team, but it meant that I had a lot of time on my hands. And I said to myself, this is your sabbatical year, try it out. And if you feel that you're not adding value to the cause, then get back into corporate. And so the whole year I spent understanding the issue, volunteering my services with another NGO that was trying to mobilize communities around the issue. I convinced them to take up public safety, and we were able to get the police to change beat patrol timings using the data that we collected from the community. And, you know, Safe City took off. But I was also trying other things. I also had another initiative which was focused on aged care, at-home aged care, and also for youth. But, you know, Safe City was the one that, you know, was exciting, innovative, and seemed to gain a lot of traction. I was getting a lot of job offers as well, but I had to make a choice. I made a choice. And it's not even now I get job offers, but, you know, it's a long career. You know, it's close to 20 years that you've kind of invested in one industry and you don't just give it up.
So Elsa, you have mentioned bits and bobs here about Safe City, but some of our listeners may have not heard about your work. So for our listeners, can you just please explain what Safe City is and what you do exactly?
So when the gang rape of Jyoti Singh took place in Delhi, it was a very, I would say a shocking incident for all of us. It opened up the conversation on sexual violence. And for the first time, I could remember, you know, that people were talking, my friends were talking about their experiences. It forced me to think of all these incidents that had happened in my life, including the one when I was 13 years old on a train. And that's when I realized that, you know, this is data that is lost because it doesn't make it to the official records. It does not reflect daily reality. And since I'd heard about HarassMap, my friends and I decided, let's launch this. So Safe City is a platform which encourages people to share their personal stories of sexual violence in public spaces anonymously. These are then plotted as location-based trends and visualized on a map as hotspots. And the idea is to understand this information so that you can use it in many ways. One is at an individual level to improve your own situational awareness so that you can make better choices for your own safety. Second is as a community to find local solutions because you now have access to the data to mobilize your community, but also hold institutional service providers like police and municipal authorities in doing a better job. And the third is it's a new data set itself for these institutional service providers, which they can add so that they can make better decisions. And just like we use peer review sites like TripAdvisor, Yelp, etc. on a daily basis, why can't we use this site to learn from each other and our experiences? Often, you know, when we experience sexual violence, we think of it as an individual experience. And society puts the blame on us. Like, why, you know, it makes you think that you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, wearing the wrong clothing or provoked it to happen. But when you can see that it's not just you, it's happening to so many in maybe the same locations, it forces you to think differently about the issue. And you start to think, okay, what can I do about this? And how can I, bust these perpetrators out of this comfort zone of theirs?
Yeah, and something that really stood out to me, Elsa, is that you, not only do you tackle sexual violence, which is mostly physical, but also non-physical forms of violence and abuse that takes place on a daily basis in India. And, you know, at one point, based on the data that you collected for Safe City, a certain location right next to a tea stall had popped up as a hotspot for sexual abuse because a lot of men who were on their, you know, evening tea breaks or whatever, they would just linger and either pass comments on the women and girls passing by, or they would sit together and stare at them. And you had a very ingenious solution to this problem, which finally resulted in these men not sitting around and staring anymore. So do you want to share what you did there?
Yes. So first of all, sexual violence is a whole spectrum of abuse ranging from non-verbal to verbal to physical abuse. But unfortunately, we always think of it as rape, which is the most extreme form. And we normalize all the others. A lot of our data actually is on nonverbal and verbal forms of abuse. And one of the hotspots, like you mentioned, was on a busy main road in Delhi near a tea stall, which is in India a very male dominated space. You'll never find women hanging around over there drinking their tea at leisure. Anyway, so these men would stare at women, you know, comment on them. And this was a place where, you know, it was the main access point for these women and girls on their way to work or school or college. And they would feel intimidated and would either take a longer route or they would avoid it completely, you know. And so when we presented the data to the community and asked them what they would like to do, they said we would like the staring to stop. And we organized an art-based workshop with the Fearless Collective. They do amazing work. And they helped the women think through the messaging and they painted staring eyes and subtle messaging, which translates in English to look with your heart, not with your eyes. We won't be intimidated by your gaze. We will break our silence, and so on and so forth. And, You know, for these women and girls, many of them didn't even know to write. It was also empowering because they were expressing themselves, which they couldn't directly say to the men. And for the men and boys, it was putting them under the scanner because, you know, this was in their face and they could not no longer ignore it. And the staring and loitering actually stopped. And that was, you know, we had several journalists go there to check it out. And the community actually told them, we now encourage people to move on. And we've used art and wall murals in many places. We've used it outside Sapphire College in Bombay, where the girls decided in addition to put the sections of the law that make it a crime. And I remember we had so many men stop by and say thank you because they did not know this was a crime. And then in and then in Delhi, they adopted what the Sapphire girls did, and outside a hotspot which was near a public toilet, they did the same. They put the sections of the law, and that had an instant effect in the community, because often we forget that people, you know, we try to educate women and girls on their rights, etc. But what about the men and boys? Nobody has explained to them that this is inappropriate, and we expect them to know it. But if no one has told them and they continue to think it's normal behavior, they don't know it's a crime. So a lot of our work, a large part of it, is involving them in through our workshops and campaigns, trying to educate them as well on the spectrum of abuse, on the stereotypes and norms that, you know, make it normalized, and then the legislation.
So, but there's always a flip side of the coin, Elsa. You know, someone who's not aware of the ogling or gawking phenomenon that takes place in India won't even understand what the big deal is. And a lot of the times, we girls are asked not to complain about this issue because the counter question is either, you know, why are you noticing these boys in the first place? Or let them stare because that's the best they can do. You know, why does it matter to you? And I have personally experienced this so many times. So what would you say to family members and even other fellow women who try to either laugh it off as a harmless issue or try to dissuade you from reacting?
I believe we should have dialogue, you know, so we have to start talking about it. And therefore, our workshops are never only for women or only for men. We try to have a mixed group so that everyone can hear their, you know, the other person's side of the story. We have to explain to men and boys that this is not acceptable. And in many cases, it is a crime. And they cannot afford to ignore it any longer because it is a law in many cases, including at the workplace. In the family setup, we should have these conversations. It should not no longer be taboo. We do a lot of workshops for parents on how they can talk to their children on prevention of child sex abuse, on keeping an open door so that the children feel comfortable talking about their experiences. You know, because when you're a child, most often the perpetrator is a known person. And it's very difficult to go to a parent who is not willing to listen or who dismisses your experience as a figment of somebody's imagination. Or even parents should be able to talk to teenagers about healthy relationships. So I believe, you know, we should have these conversations at home, in schools, in colleges, and sexual relationships, consent. These are topics that should no longer be taboo.
But Elsa, I just had a curiosity. You mentioned that these are the conversations we should be having at home. Did you ever have any conversations like these?
Yes. My parents were very straightforward. And, you know, we used to have these conversations. And they never treated my brother any differently from us. You know, I have a sister and a brother. Mm-hmm. So all three of us were treated equally. We were allowed to you know, pick our own careers, pick our own educational fields, and we've always felt supported.
So when this scenario happened at the age of 13, and did you tell your parents then, and did they help you out with this problem?
Actually, I did not, you know, because again, I just felt it was my fault. You know, I just felt, I don't know why. I mean, I often think about it like, you know, why did I not speak up? You know, and therefore, you know, it's I feel and I encourage parents to talk to their children proactively. So, like, I would say, like, my parents did speak to us, but we were, it was not always all the time, you know. But now I see my sister and my sister-in-law, they have children. And even though the kids are little, they're always talking about it, you know. I mean, not talking about, you know, talking which is age appropriate for them, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, Elsa, we were discussing this a couple of weeks ago about this Harvey Weinstein case, and all these women are coming out now and saying, you know, that we were sexually harassed and we were abused. But everyone, I had this question in my mind all the time, like, why didn't you speak up then? Why are you talking now, 40 years down the line or 30 years down the line? And I guess now it's becoming a lot easier to speak about it because of initiatives that you have, you know, you follow through with, like Safe City and stuff. People are much more comfortable sharing these stories. I guess back then it wasn't as easy to open up because you were afraid of what people would think about you.
Not just that, when your career is at stake, you can't possibly just, you know, throw everything away. Imagine you're a single mother. You have to support your family. You have to bring in this income. Then you can't just go up and open up back then when it was very easy for these big men to just crush you. So it's totally understandable why they couldn't come out then. Yeah. And they're coming out now.
You know, it's even with Me Too, I've seen a lot of women have put Me Too on Facebook without a story. And that to me still says we have a lot of work to do. Because it takes courage for somebody to open up and share their story, and then others feel, okay, I'm not alone and I can share mine too. But yet there are others who don't want to relive that experience, and it's totally understandable. And they may not want to do it in the public domain. I believe it's only going to intensify. We are going to hear many more stories. We are going to see many more powerful men have to admit to their transgressions. And we will see a change in a lot of policies as well. So it's a good thing. We are at the cusp of something really important that's going on. Not just in acknowledging this, but also you're going to see, you know, on the home front, roles being a little more balanced, where women will demand that men take up their responsibility. So, you know, it's a movement and it's picking up steam, and technology and social media allow you to do that. And I believe having conversations like what you're doing through your podcast is also important, because people need to hear this. People need to hear that it's okay to say, to share your story. And at Safe City, we also say it's okay to report it anonymously. We encourage you, even if it's hard, to record it, because it's important to document it, but it's also a data point. And that data is very, very important for us to A, establish the magnitude of the problem, B, to identify what are the trends so that we can start looking for, you know, either localized solutions or issue-based solutions, because sexual violence is a whole spectrum of abuse. We cannot have one solution for all. We have to have a multiple, and it's so integrated in our life that we do have to have multiple solutions and innovative solutions.
Well, actually, we're very lucky. We're very lucky now that, especially in India, you know, access to internet has become much easier. So we can even reach out to more and more people, you know, throughout time. And I think things like Safe City is a great way to actually tackle this, because earlier on, you know, we always used to say that a lot of girls don't have access to education, they don't have access to a school. But now we can't really say that, because getting access to information has become so much easier now. And if we put the right information across, hopefully we'll see many more changes in the future.
But you will also see a backlash, because, you know, yesterday I was at Buckingham Palace and the Royal Countess of Wessex hosted us, and she was mentioning that on every metric we are actually sliding backwards where gender equality is concerned, you know. So I think that's a worrying situation, because, you know, if you take the recent maternity bill as well that was passed in India, it's had an adverse effect, because employers don't really want to employ women because they will have to give them 6 months maternity leave. And I think, you know, we have to stand up for each other. We have to acknowledge that there is a problem in the system. It's been decades and centuries, you know, that women have suffered, and that we have to make a conscious choice that we are going to be, you know, fair and just in our policies, in our approach, in our thinking, and in our behavior. Just having, you know, a policy that ticks a box or, you know, kind of standing in solidarity on social media and paying lip service to the cause without, you know, walking your talk is not enough.
So, Elsa, just moving on from Safe City, your NGO Red Dot Foundation was launched 2 years after Safe City came into being. And the general objective of the organization is to work towards gender equality and women empowerment. So how do you go about achieving this through your foundation?
So we registered our organization 2 years later, and that was a conscious decision because, like I told you, I wanted to be sure that I was adding value to the cause. And if I wasn't, you know, I had no business being in this sector. I had to go back to my corporate job. Anyway, so I wanted it to be a broader theme when we registered our organization so that we could, you know, work on different areas, not just sexual violence in public spaces. So yes, Safe City is our flagship program where we have our crowd map and we have the data coming in. But we also have workshops ranging from child sex abuse awareness for children, for parents and teachers. We do workshops in corporates for sexual harassment at the workplace prevention. We sit on internal complaints committees, you know, where they investigate complaints on harassment. I also have another crowd map called Women Speakers because I'm so fed up of manuals and I'm so fed up of people saying they can't find experts who are women. And I encourage anyone with any kind of experience to put themselves on the map because, you know, again, at different conferences, you have the same women being represented and we are not creating a pipeline. We need to create a pipeline. How is somebody going to get confidence if they've never been given an opportunity? You know, so we need to open up our doors. We need to, you know, provide a situation where women feel confident speaking up their mind, giving their thoughts, putting their thoughts out on the table, etc. So Women Speakers is something that I started. We have about 700 or 800 names from all over the world. We've been approached by conference organizers for access to our list, though it's a public site. And yes, there are other projects that I would like to do. But for now, I'm focused on Safe City and starting Safe City chapters in different parts of the world.
And now you've expanded beyond just Mumbai and Delhi. You've even gone to Nepal and Kenya. So how do you manage these various teams? And what would you say like is the structure of your work now that you've started to go international?
So Safe City is really a movement that we are creating. The organization has to have a legal structure, but what we try to do is create a lot of flexible ways where we can partner with different groups of people. I mentioned to you that I am a member of the Vital Voices Women's Network. There are women leaders from all over the world working on various aspects of women empowerment, including eradicating violence against women and girls in all forms. And so they make very likely partners. These are partners of mine who are part of the program. And when they heard about my work, they said, can we use your platform? And we said, sure. And even without any grants or funding or whatever, we were able to train their teams over Skype, get them to start crowd mapping from their communities and help them with the data. And they would provide the context and help them think through what could be the local solutions, which have been interesting in all these countries. I'll give you some examples. You know, in Kenya, for example, we work in Kibera, which is one of the largest slums. And one of the hotspots was on a road near a mosque where young men would grope these girls going to school. And it was a really disturbing experience every day when they went to school. So when the data came in, my partner invited the imam of the mosque and showed him the data, and he started preaching in his sermons, and that had an instant effect on the community. Whereas in Nepal, in Kathmandu, my partner organization wanted to prove that transportation was not adequate for women because they don't have proper transportation like any other capital city has. They have mini buses. And if it's meant for 20 people, they will shove 50 people into it. Imagine if you're a woman on your way to work every day. So yes, the data did prove that, and she was able to convince the transportation authorities to issue women-only bus licenses, which she plied on one of the busiest bus routes in Kathmandu till the earthquake struck and, you know, everything got destroyed. The data also showed child sex abuse by known perpetrators. And we were then looking for partners to, use that data to actually advocate within the community that they should really start discussing this issue. And the data, you had evidence-based data to prove that. So, my colleagues in the Vital Voices networks have been really supportive. And we now have partners in Malaysia, Argentina, Nigeria. We are starting in South Africa. We have an individual in Cameroon who collected over 500 data sets. But then we realized that Cameroon doesn't have legislation. So I put her onto my Vital Voices colleagues over there who are helping her think through that piece. So there's a lot of interesting thing when you, interesting insights that come up when you have data.
And, this is based on things that you've shared now and you've shared before, that on the one hand, we want equal representation of women in the workplace. And on the other, these very same women don't have access to safe public transportation or many of the public spaces. And sometimes we women don't even have the freedom to walk alone on the streets, past a certain time. So ideally, you said that we need to live in a world where every woman feels safe to simply walk down a street at any given time. And Safe City surely helps to make our cities and our streets safe. Elsa, but have you faced any challenges with the app or even otherwise with your work, which makes the tackling of this problem a lot harder than you initially thought it would be?
The hardest thing has been to get women to break their silence and share their stories. That has really been the hardest. But once we have the data and we present it to the community has always stepped up to say, this is not right. We need to change it. And that's where you find the most interesting solutions coming up. The police have been very proactive. I was speaking at a security conference once in Delhi. I was the only non-police personnel there. And they said that they were already scanning my website for trends. So that's when I decided, okay, if that's the case, I will send them a dashboard every month. So that's how I ended up sending dashboards to the police in Bombay, Delhi, and in Goa. And the Delhi police, I even had to send my staff to sit in their office for a week because they had never seen data like that. And our largest data set is in Delhi.
Wow.
So we had to explain to them. They acknowledged that they don't get this kind of data. We have just got a mail from the CISF Railway Police in Delhi asking if they can partner with us, if they can have access to our data. And I think it's important because, ultimately, there's so much of reluctance. If you can imagine, if our site is a neutral site and women are still hesitant to share their stories, why would they feel comfortable going to a hostile authority or perceived to be hostile authority like the police, where they do not feel that they would get any justice or access? I personally believe that, we have to build the trust. We have to build the trust and strengthen these institutions. I don't see Safe City replacing any of these institutions. I feel we are a complementary data set.
A booster.
Yeah, a complementary data set that can be used. And we must recognize that till we have such a time where there's complete trust, police and, other organizations will not be seen as, sensitive enough to deal with women's issues. You also have the justice system, which is so long and lengthy to get any kind of redressal.
Yeah, and the other day, Elsa, I was walking back home with an Ethiopian friend of mine at around 9 p.m. at night, and this was in Scotland, and she was talking to me about the Delhi gang rape case and about street safety in general. And, she in turn was telling me about her country, and she was saying how progress-wise, culture-wise, and even food-wise, there are many similarities between India and Ethiopia, but still it's absolutely safe for women to walk out at night. At least she felt that it was completely okay for a woman to just walk out on her own at night and she would be safe. And since you're working with organizations abroad these days as well, especially in places like Kenya, have you noticed a similar trend that in comparison to India, some of these other countries are a lot more safer?
You know, I won't say that one is safer than the other. Let's say that every place has its own context. So, for example, in Kenya, what we are seeing is a lot of known perpetrator violence and a lot of brutal violence within the home, you know. So, and there you can be abducted or kidnapped. Again, it depends which area, you know. Since we work in Kibera, I can only speak for that area because that's where what the data is showing. But if you take Delhi and Bombay, the kind of data we are seeing from Delhi and Bombay is very different. Bombay is showing more of touching, groping, etc., masturbation in public spaces, whereas Delhi is showing more non-verbal, verbal forms of it. So it's maybe women in Bombay are not reporting verbal and non-verbal, you know, whereas in Delhi, it's so in your face. The male gaze is so very strong. I don't know. So we have to, and then within Delhi also, different places are showing different trends. Like Connaught Place, there's more touching, groping, which I believe is because it's not a residential area. It's more commercial. So under the guise of anonymity, people get away with it. But in a more residential area like Rohini, we are seeing chain snatching, etc. Which, again, if you look at it, the solutions are different. If it's chain snatching, you need more police presence. But in, say, Okhla, it's more of staring and nonverbal forms of it, or even verbal. So maybe we need to do advocacy campaigns, put up big signboards saying this is not right, or maybe street theater might be the way to do it. I don't know. So we have to look at context. We have to understand what could be the best solution. And not everything requires police intervention.
And Elsa, this Ethiopian woman that I just told you about, she's a mother of a 10-year-old child. And I was also trying to explain to her that her being a mom or a slightly more mature woman would not guarantee her safety in an isolated state, isolated street in India. And age does not really play a role when it comes to these kind of instances. Because for the perpetrators at the end of the day, all that matters is that it's a woman and she's helpless. So, you know, you've shared that when you started collecting stories for your initiative, stories from up to 20 years ago began to resurface. But I'm wondering if there were any current stories from older women who perhaps even had older children.
So we now started collecting age, but on our web app, we don't ask for age. So it's hard unless in the text of the report, they do mention it. But I have seen older women also talking about it because there are reports of, you know, my daughter and I find it difficult to walk down a street because, you know, these men loiter over there. Or, for example, I'm returning home from work. So that could be an older woman, you know. But if you take news reports, I mean, a 90-year-old was raped, right? And stuff, you know, shoved into her anus. I mean, like, what kind you know, people would do something like that. So ranging from babies to old women to women in burqas, I don't think dress or age or religion or any kind of thing matters. Yes, you know, whether you're vulnerable or not. And that's why also situational awareness is very important. See, I come from the aviation industry. I was a safety instructor. So we, you know, I always like to quote that on every flight before departure, we do a demo, a safety demo, and that's to increase the situational awareness of passengers so that when things go wrong, you react faster and get out of the aircraft as quickly as possible. But in our day-to-day life, we are not situationally aware where safety is concerned. And therefore, it's important, like, you know, things like Safe City can help you understand the context of what's going on in different places. You can make better choices. It's not about avoiding the places. And we do not rate any area safe or unsafe. There are other apps for that. What we are doing is collecting individual stories and you read them to see, okay, if chain snatching is an issue, how can I best protect myself? If groping is an issue, am I better prepared? You know? So I'm not taken by surprise. I'm not vulnerable, but I can react faster. Most of us freeze or we tend to flee, but we don't fight back. And maybe you don't have to fight back in all situations. You have to do what's best for you. But you will be able to react faster. And that's what we're trying to do. But also, if you wanted this information, and that was the second half of my career in aviation, which was all data-driven, where we made decisions based on, data that was available, historic data to make future predictions. I feel that if, as a community, if you wanted information on safety, you will get high-level data, but you will never get it at a street-level setting. So Safe City allows you to do that, drill down to the street level, and you can then rally your neighbors to fight the issue with you. And we have proven that with just 20 data points, you don't need big data, you need relevant data. With just 20 data points, you can get the police to change beat patrol timings or municipal authorities to do a better job.
Are we capable of getting shocked anymore? We were discussing with Kirti a couple of weeks ago about the public getting desensitized to rape and even feeling quite apathetic when there are public instances of sexual abuse. And to some extent, I feel like this has become a sort of endemic in India. And tackling this issue, as you mentioned before, is one that is very, very complex. So you've mentioned one approach, which is to look at sexual abuse as a chain of many things. Do you feel there's any other way we can approach this problem?
To be very honest, I think all of us are apathetic till it happens to us or someone we know. And till that time, we don't really care. Do we really want to wait for that time? I mean, think of Jyoti Singh. She went for Life of Pi, which many of us did. She was returning home at 8 p.m., which is not late. She took what she thought was a bus with people on it. I mean, that's a very normal situation, and she lost her life and under such tragic circumstances. I mean, it could be any one of us. I mean, every day if you read the newspapers, things are happening. You know, do we want to be one of those statistics, or do we want to walk down a street like your friend in Ethiopia if they can do it in Ethiopia, why not in India? And as a woman who has to be successful, when we talk of women empowerment and economic empowerment, how do we expect women to join the workforce and get quality jobs if we don't give them the space to explore their potential? I was able to network with my male colleagues. When does that happen? In the night, after work. Where does that happen? In settings like bars, which may not be seen as women's spaces. You know, you have to get out there, put yourself out there if you really want a high career or a well-paying job. You cannot expect everything to fall into your lap. It is not a level playing field either. I upskill myself by going to night college. So I would work in the day and then go to college 7 to 9. You know, you don't become vice president network planning whilst, you know, working alongside without reskilling yourself. But you cannot do that if your curfew is 7 p.m. to come home before it's dark, you know. So if you want to, you know, increase your opportunities, you have to be able to be in any public space at any time of day or night, just like your male colleagues. And it shouldn't be unsafe for you.
Now, we mentioned the Me Too campaign in passing earlier, Elsa, and one of the main interesting things that came out of your campaign of collecting stories of sexual abuse is that a lot of support started pouring in from men who had no idea that women had been going through these things. And you did this way before the Me Too campaign even became popular. So clearly your initiative to collect these stories was successful, but has there been anyone in your circles who ever came up to you stating that collecting stories and sharing these stories and simply discussing these issues was not as important?
No, I think it's very important. And it's very important to discuss these stories because a lot of men and boys, actually, when they read these stories, it hits home the pain, you know, the pain that women go through. And a lot of them, most of our data analysts are men and boys, and they, you know, are very touched with these stories. When we do workshops in colleges, often without the storytelling, women will never identify with the problem because they don't think their experience is They think it's unique and not part of a larger problem. But when they hear another girl share her story or a group share their stories, they suddenly, it's like a tube light going on in your mind, in your head. And suddenly, you know, you're not alone. And it's not just you. And it's not only you're the problem. You know, there's a larger systemic issue. I had one girl tell me, you know, oh my God, I thought it was only me. I did not know that it was happening to everyone else. And there are so many men and boys who after the workshop say, we are going to discuss it with our friends. We are going to go home and have a chat with our sisters, our mothers. And I think that is important. The dialogue piece is very important.
No, I completely agree with you. But the reason I asked you was because in the past month when the Me Too campaign was happening, I noticed a lot of negativity in my, you know, Facebook feeds, especially from my Indian female circles. And one instance was when a lady who happened to be a teacher, by the way, she posted a status saying that she reacted, she kicked and slapped anyone who tried to abuse her, and she followed up the status with the hashtag not me too. And I was sitting there thinking, lady, the fact that you had to kick, slap and react is the reason why this campaign exists. So I wanted to ask you particularly, how would you respond to someone who didn't believe in the power of speaking up and sharing these stories?
See, I think it's a choice, right? Everyone has a choice. I can only encourage people to share their stories. I cannot force them. And, you know, I also believe in positivity, that yes, we have a situation where it's not fair, it's not equal, but I'm optimistic. I think there are lots of wonderful initiatives and campaigns that are trying to push the needle, and together we can. You know, Safe City, our handle on Twitter is called Pin the Creep. We have about 177,000 followers. It's a curated handle, which means we don't control it. Anyone can take over and speak about the issue from their point of view. And we have never been trolled. Even on Facebook, it's always been a positive discussion. So I like to focus on the positivity. I like to put forward the ideas in a positive manner as well. Because I don't want to turn away men and boys. I don't want to discourage women. I would like to highlight, you know, the ways that they can find help and turn it into a positive outcome. And I wish, you know, we have more dialogue on this. Because, yes, there will always be somebody else who has a different point of view. Many people may not agree with my methods. You know, a lot of people will say that this is not as per what I think is right. And they're entitled to it. But I can try my best to explain, and I leave it at that. If they don't wish to, I can't force them.
And how many stories have you collected so far?
It's over 10,500. Wow. And like I mentioned, it's been the toughest thing. Because more than 90% of these stories have come in through our workshops, campaigns, face-to-face meetings. But now I've started to see reports come in from various places. We have random reports from Kyrgyzstan, from the Caribbean, from Mexico, from, you know, we have 8 reports from the Philippines.
Wow.
Yeah, so I always wonder, how did they hear about us? But, you know, I think it's a movement. It's growing slowly. And hopefully, you know, we'll reach a stage where we no longer find it taboo to talk about it. And maybe in the future, we never have the need to report it.
And this is your 4th year since you started Safe City. And in this year, would you say that you're close to achieving the goals you set out with?
So I've always felt that you have to reevaluate your goals. So, you know, what I set out to do, I think I've far exceeded it. I never thought it was going to be a global movement. But my goals this year are, or rather for the coming year, is to focus on strengthening the technology platform, putting a toolkit in place where anyone anywhere in the world can start a Safe City chapter. You know, following our guidelines, but still having flexibility to be, you know, innovative and creative. And yeah, raising funds, because without money, you can't really do much.
Yeah. So what is next for you then, Elsa? Do you have any more plans? I know you're working hard in Safe City and your foundation. So do you have any more new plans in the for the future?
At the moment, it's all around Safe City. So we have an Indian not-for-profit, that's Red Dot Foundation. And I just registered a U.S. entity, which is going through its 501c3 status, which makes it a not-for-profit in the United States. So I'm just going to concentrate for the next couple of years on building these two organizations, strengthening them, and then let's see what other aspects of gender equality I want to work on.
And finally, Elsa, we want you to educate us and our listeners before you leave, you know, because a while ago at a workshop with about 40 law students, I believe, you asked those who had never faced any form of sexual violence to raise their hands, and a few hands shot up. And in the next few minutes, you went into the layers of sexual violence and you explained all the components to the term. And then you asked the participants who had never faced any form of sexual violence to raise their hands again, and not even a single hand went up. So we're sure that some of our listeners today are also probably, you know, either in denial or completely unaware of the abuse that they may have faced. So could you explain to all of us what all comes under the broad umbrella of sexual violence and when we should speak up?
So sexual violence ranges, like I said, from non-verbal. So that could be staring, ogling, leering, taking pictures without permission. There's also verbal, which is commenting, catcalling, sexual invites, which is, different in intensity. There's touching, groping, masturbation in public spaces, showing pornography against one's will. There's stalking both physically as well as online. And then there's sexual assault and rape, those are the broad areas. But I would encourage you to look and understand what's the legislation in your country in different contexts. So in India, we have very strong laws for, sexual violence in public spaces. We have it for workplaces. We have it on child sex abuse. We have for domestic violence. Educate yourself because, these are recourses that are available to you. They are your rights. Get familiar with them. Understand what do you do when you are faced with a situation, and then don't be afraid to seek help. So, there are lots of NGOs out there who provide individual, help on individual cases, whether it's counseling, whether it's legal aid, or even accompanying you to file an FIR. At Safe City, we work on general trends. So we do, get you in touch with the right NGO should you reach out to us. But unfortunately, we don't have the bandwidth to do all those things right now. Yes, if there's anything else that you would like to, work on. So every one of us has a responsibility to make our immediate environment safe for each of us, our families and our friends and neighbors. So make sure that, you don't indulge in sexual violence yourself. You are not a perpetrator. If you see one, doing something that is not correct, have a dialogue with that person, educate that person, and maybe seek help.
I think it's just very important for people to understand that help is there, help is available. You just need to put in a bit of effort and find it if it's very difficult for you to understand what's going on around you. Elsa, thank you so much for joining us today. You've not only educated our listeners, but I'm sure with Ankita probably feels the same. You've educated me as well, and I'm very, very grateful for that. So if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they go about that?
There are several ways you can get in touch through our website, which is www.safecity.in, through Twitter, Pin the Creep. Facebook is safecity.in as well. You can download our app on Android and iOS. It's Safe City. It's available in Hindi, English, and Spanish. And you can also write to me, elsa@safecity.in.
Thank you so much. Thank you once again, Elsa, for coming on the show. And this has been truly wonderful.
Thank you. It was lovely talking to you.
And as always, thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Be sure to download the Safety app and spread the word about street safety and the work Elsa does in this field.
You can get in touch with Elsa on social media at Elsa Marie De Silva, and you can find us at Desi Outsiders as well. And do send in your comments, feedback, and questions to mail at desioutsiders.com. And we'll see you next week. So until then, I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we're the Desi Outsiders.